For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the latest episode of the Three Down Nation podcast. Fellas, I take 1 week off, and you know, John Hodge is always after me about shutting up and not talking about Canadian quarterbacks. And what does he do? He brings up arguably the best Canadian quarterback nugget in the history of our home and native land. Hodge, what do you got to say for yourself?
Well, I have to say you're welcome, because you didn't know about this amazing fact that I read through exclusive reporting I did off of a press release. That was a joke. And now our listeners know it, our watchers on YouTube know it, and you know it. The king of Canadian quarterbacks, who will never, ever, ever shut up about Canadian quarterbacks. How'd you not know this fact?
Bro, unbelievable. Full credit to Earl Zuckerman, who's the sports information director at McGill University. He's been there for a long time. So if he has something in a press release, man, I'm taking that to the bank, dude. Full credit to you. I don't know how he didn't know, bro. I'm not that old, I guess. That's my only excuse.
Are you actually going to create a shrine in your closet like I thought you might?
I did think about it. Maybe I'll need to put it together with the Canadian quarterbacks that I like most in there. Like, it can be a Canadian quarterback Mount Rushmore, for lack of a better term, in my closet that I will wake up and praise before I go to bed.
I like
okay, who's on the Mount Rushmore?
Oh, Doc, good
you,
question.
You gotta throw that out. Who's the Canadian
quarterback? I thought you guys don't want me talking about Canadian quarterbacks.
No, now I'm invested.
We're putting you on the spot.
Now I'm invested.
You know, this would be difficult, but for sure, Russ Jackson has to be on
yes,
there.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think we would agree. And then, you know, after that, I think it can kind of go in different directions here. I think there's a chance that Nathan Rourke ends up there. He would probably already be there on mine personally. If I got to think about the other ones, man, there's so many names that come to my mind. Well, I'm thinking, do you guys have any that you think should be on there?
I mean, Mark Rippon is a Super Bowl MVP, but didn't play Canadian football. So that's also a distinction. Is this Canadian Football Hall of Fame rules where what you did in four down football doesn't matter, or because you're a Canadian quarterback, do you still get a spot in the shrine? Because if we were to do, with apologies to people of Catholic faith, if you were to do a Holy Trinity, let's say, of Canadian quarterbacks, I agree that Russ Jackson is the top, but I think you got to give a shoulder to a Super Bowl MVP. Do you not?
You're probably right. And that's where my mind goes to is a guy like Jesse Palmer, played at the University of Florida and is well known, was in the NFL for a number of years. But what he's done in his post-football life is amazing. Are we just talking football? Because this guy's out here hosting The Bachelorette, man.
You also got to look at Chris Flynn, right?
Oh, yeah, Chris Flynn.
Chris Flynn was the next name that came to my mind after Russ Jackson, to be quite honest.
Chris Flynn was special. I wish he would have gotten more of a realistic shot in the CFL. Spent some time with the Montreal Machine of the World Football League, but man, he was so exciting as a youth sports player going back and watching that film and his highlight reels. Just a special, special athlete.
You know what? You guys gave an idea for all of us. It's likely going to be me, which I'm happy to do. For an off-season piece, we can do every year and update it. Three Down Nation's Canadian quarterback Mount Rushmore. And then every year we see, do the rankings move? Does somebody go on Mount Rushmore and get taken off?
Ouch.
I dig it.
I think it could even be bigger. Like, do a top 10, like the top 10 Canadian quarterbacks of all time. That's a list I would love to read. And I agree, Russ Jackson could be there for a long time if he's ever surpassed as the number one. But if you want to talk Mark Rypien, you want to talk Chris Flynn, you want to talk even like a guy like Brad Sinopoli, albeit not a quarterback at the professional level, but had a sensational U Sports career. There's a ton of guys available. Trey Ford is presumably moving up that list with each passing year to at least some extent. And we have some really exciting quarterbacks in this year's draft, whether it's Taylor Elgersma potentially getting a look down south, whether it's guys like Jonathan Senecal, former head Creighton Trophy winner. So that it's an intriguing list. There's old names, there's new names. I'm looking forward to it. I expect it to be filed by tomorrow.
You guys know guys, could go like, on forever by tomorrow.
Jerry DiTillio, Don Getty. Let's throw some real throwbacks in there. There you go.
By the way, if anyone's seen the TV show Lost, there's a character on that show named Dan Faraday. He's a fictional character, and it threw me for such a loop. I watched that show with my wife probably 3-4 years ago. By the way, it's not that good. I'm sorry. I see it on a lot of like best television show lists. It's not that good. But it was so disorienting to repeatedly hear, well, Dan Faraday, blah, 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 Dan Faraday. I'm like, I'm probably in like the 0.00 whatever percent of people who care about this, but I find this very distracting. It would be like watching the show Friends, but the main character's name is like, I don't know, Nathan Rourke or something like that. It was very bizarre.
You know what I find distracting, Hodge? You don't have a hat covering your dome this week. I don't understand why. And I wondered, I wasn't on the pod last week, so I had to ask you. Last week you had on a Los Angeles Lakers hat. Are you on the Luka Doncic bandwagon? Like, are you jumping to the Lakers now because Doncic got traded there? Are you driving a car like Luka Doncic that we need to know about? Have you seen that whip that he's toting around LA? Oh my goodness.
What do you mean toting around LA? You mean having sit in traffic for hours and hours and hours at a time? That's all a car is good for in LA. I'm not a Lakers fan. I decided to somewhat recently expand my collection of hats. So I just picked some kind of iconic teams and asked for them for Christmas presents and stuff like that. So my collection is growing. I don't really honestly cheer for sports teams in any league. Like as a Winnipegger who has never once covered hockey, like I have some Jets gear. It'd be great if the Jets won the Stanley Cup, but I do not live and die by the Winnipeg Jets. And outside of that, I don't really have an NFL team. Like I kind of like the Raiders for their history, but when the Raiders lose, I don't feel sad. I kind of like tacitly a Toronto Raptors fan because there are Canadian representation in the NBA. But if
we all went to a Raptors game together once, remember that?
Yeah, and then
then we got
started on fire, and we got let out. So anyway, like I don't really cheer for teams is the bottom line. I just like sports. I cheer for certain people, but I don't really cheer for teams.
You just want like Brendan Maguire's pipe dream there to be a CFL team in New York and then a CFL team in LA because it's the size of Canada. I can hear him making the argument right now.
The last team and I'm a huge curling fan. Not that I want to talk about curling at length on this podcast because I can already hear people rolling their eyes.
So that's the sports team that you cheer for, curling.
Well, curling is a sport, not a team. But the last team
Team Manitoba, right? That's who you would cheer for.
More or less, but with the current rules.
Carrie Einerson. Are you surprised I know that name?
Einerson, it's pronounced, not Einerson.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Calaris, Calaros. Potato, potato.
I am impressed that you know who Carrie Einerson is. Rachel Holman, by the way, congratulations on a second consecutive Scotties victory. Undefeated 100% in the final.
She's elite, bro.
She is unbelievably good. Like, unbelievably good. But my favorite curling team forever was the legendary, I've got her picture up in my office, Jennifer Jones, who retired from the women's game last year. So with Jennifer Jones retiring, I feel like across all sports now, I don't have teams. I just have certain individuals and I cheer for storylines like any good reporter should.
I was in a Saskatchewan restaurant a couple years ago and Jennifer Jones walked in there and I was just like, don't follow curling. I'm like, you see her all over. And I kind of got starstruck, which usually doesn't happen. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, she just walked in here like a regular person. Like, what? Yeah.
Jennifer Jones is extremely intelligent, extremely kind. I don't know her well personally, but like I've talked to many reporters who have covered her, including the late Ted Wyman, who wrote a wonderful book about her, and Brad Jacobs winning gold at the 2014 Olympic Winter Games. I'd highly recommend it. And to a person, it doesn't matter how big you are, how small you are in the media landscape, in the curling landscape, whatever, literally everybody has nothing but positive things to say about Jennifer Jones. Tremendous ambassador for the game, and somebody who I think is going to continue to do great things for the game even after retiring from the women's game. Though she's still playing mixed doubles with her husband, Brent Lang, fellow curler. So,
Hod, you know what would be some great crossover content? You talking to these curlers about their favorite Canadian Football League teams.
Sure. Sounds good. I'd be very interested to know, especially who, like, which teams people from the territories cheer for, or the Maritimes, where there is no CFL teams. That's not a bad idea. Maybe on Three Downs budget, I can go to next year's Scotties and report back. It's in Mississauga.
I like it. Let's do it. All right, fellas, time to talk ball. We're discussing two Regina Rams facing drug charges.
The CFL's Invitational Combine.
The Hamilton Tiger Cats bringing back a familiar face along the defensive line.
Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke doing some snow shoveling just to get in some throws.
An intriguing Canadian receiver being added back to the 2025 CFL draft.
And Charleston Hughes revealing the biggest regret of his career. But first,
Hodge, you reported the financial details for Edmonton's free agent signings, which totaled over $2.2 million in hard money spending. How much are these top free agent additions making in 2025? And what do you think about the Elks' new swanky depth chart?
So we've taken the liberty here at Three Down Nation to make depth charts for all nine CFL teams. And we've talked, you know, at length to at least certain extents about certain signings already. We talked about our power rankings last week, but I want to do a better deep dive and report a lot of these financials. Because one of my least favorite things about CFL free agency is people saying, well, this guy's a great signing or that guy's a great signing. And it's like, well, without knowing the financials, what does that really mean, right? A guy could be an amazing signing for $110,000. But a terrible signing if you give them $250,000, right? Value is a huge part of these signings. So we've done about half the teams in the league at this point. We're going to try to do the other half over the next week or so. Justin, you'd already reported that Robbie Smith is now the league's highest paid defensive player. We talked about it, JC and I, on last week's show. $270,000 in hard money. That is a tremendous amount of coin.
Sheesh.
By the way, $2.2 million. That is over a third of the salary cap as it now stands, though, given that teams, it appears, aren't going to actually spend the new money that has been allocated to the salary cap, it's well over a third. That is how much the Elks have spent, on their free agent additions. Tyrell Ford, $230,000. That is absolutely blowing the doors off the defensive back market. Last year, the highest paid DB in the CFL made only $165,000. The highest paid safety, only $153,000. Tyrell Ford, a corner, ratio breaker, and now very rich by CFL standards. Defensive tackle Jake Ceresna, $235,000 in hard money to come to the Elks. That is noteworthy because I was able to confirm he was offered more money to stay in Toronto, still decided to leave the Argonauts, follow defensive line coach Demetrius Maxey, and a number of his Toronto teammates to Edmonton, where he played from 2018 to 2023. He also got $125,000 as a signing bonus, and that's noteworthy because when a high-priced free agent signing gets hurt, ends up on the sixth game, you always see CFL fans on social media posting things like, well, this is actually not a bad thing because now the team has all this extra money to spend. And it's like, no, they don't. Jake Ceresna got $125,000 to sign. That money got paid out in February. So, no, there's not a lot left over for the team to spend. David Beard, $197,000 for arguably the best center in the CFL. That's a good deal. Royce Metier, $145,000 at safety. Brandon Barlow, $160,000 at defensive end. Jared Brinkman, same thing, $160,000 at defensive tackle. Keon Julian Grant, $153,000. And then lower amounts, still above $100,000 for defensive backs Kobe Williams and Emmanuel Rigamba. Gregor McKellar, I thought, was a really nice value add for this team at just over $100,000. Looking at the depth chart, fellas, I gotta say, this roster is pretty awesome. Like, on paper, the Edmonton Elks are a pretty damn good team right now. Like, it's just paper. It's February. Talk is cheap. We got to see it on the field. But four starters on the offensive line, two really good Canadian starters in the receiving corps, two really good Canadian starters in the secondary, and then Robbie Smith. Like this team has nine Canadian starters right now on paper. That type of ratio flexibility might be the best in the league. If not, it's close to. I'm very bullish on the Edmonton Elks on paper right now. Again, talk is cheap. It's paper. But right now, February 26th, I'm high on the Edmonton Elks.
Yeah, this team is a very exciting one to watch going forward. And I know the immediate concern that we've batted about a little bit before, Hodge, is when you're spending all this money on free agents, well, does that mean that existing pieces of the team are going to be shown the door in order to save cap space? And when I look at this Elks roster, I really wonder where there is, if any, fat to trim. Jamin Pelly was recently released. There's some cap savings there. But a lot of the other guys who are pre-existing and making money were either recently re-signed, so you can pretty much assure that they are going to be in place for next season, or are just not making much money. They've got young guys in important positions like Nick Anderson, who is still on a rookie deal, and they are not spending a ton at the receiver position right now. There's not a lot of big contracts other than these free agents, because Ed Hervey simply didn't retain most of his pending free agent players. So I think this is a really interesting, almost complete turnover of the roster, where when you look at this depth chart, it'll probably be a move or two, but it is what it's going to be going forward. And once that unit gels, they're going to be a problem in the West Division.
The depth chart, fellas, is unbelievable. And it's very clear where Ed Hervey was going to spend his money. He said it as much and then went out and did it. Offensive line and defensive line. And I know a lot of people talk about the receivers, but like Curley Gittens Jr. is still getting a pretty good chunk of change. And Kayon Julian Grant, if he can stay healthy, it might be a bit of an if, but if he can stay healthy, can be, I think, an upper tier receiver in this league. And if your scouting staff can't go out and find even one American receiver per year, just with roster turnover and the rest, and they're not doing their job. Like, I think that's how the Elks are viewing this. And also, you look at, you know, aside from Ragumba, the linebacker position, they're not spending a whole heck of a lot of money there. And even in the secondary, some of the guys that are still on rookie contracts, like Kai Gray, for example. So I think this roster is impressive. The key part that Mark Killam will be charged with, and I think he can do it, will be bringing everybody together. I think it is important that you have continuity on the offensive line. You know, for the most part, Trey Ford is back at quarterback. You got the running backs back there on an offensive unit that, oh, by the way, had the best rushing offense in the Canadian Football League last year. I think that goes somewhat under the radar because the team struggled, especially out of the gate with Chris Jones at the helm. But this roster on paper, again, and I think that should be stressed, as Hodge and JC said, looks really impressive. And I think it's, I don't want to say the way of the future, but they went out and got Canadian starters, proven high-quality nationals, and have this immense roster flexibility now to be able to do so. Like, I think they could start easily a double-digit amount of Canadians if they wanted to.
Another number I want to get on the record here, and it's in the article, and if you want to follow along with some of these depth charts, of course, please check out 3downnation.com. These signings that I laid out here, $110,000 in marketing money, which is basically the floor of marketing money you have to spend every year. By the way, due to a loophole in the salary in the collective bargaining agreement, marketing money does not count against the salary cap. So some of that spending, not a lot of it, but some of that spending of that $2.2 million, it will not appear on the salary cap. But what we know from, for example, Justin's reporting on Trey Ford's contract extension, Trey Ford has $40,000 of marketing in his deal. You add that to the $110,000 that was doled out in free agency, we now know that Edmonton is spending above the minimum marketing money, which I think is notable because, first of all, Larry Thompson, a.k.a. the Mad Driver, when he bought this team, said, we're going to invest, right? That is one of the primary reasons why he was chosen as the first ever private owner of this storied franchise, which had fallen on very hard times under community ownership. He's clearly putting his money where his mouth is, to at least some extent, right? We all know that there are people in this league who might talk a big game publicly and then behind the scenes don't necessarily follow through on what they've said because they don't think that there's ever a chance that what they're doing will be reported on necessarily. So I give Larry Thompson credit. We know, for instance, there's at least $150,000 of marketing money being spent this year. Obviously, this team is planning to build around Trey Ford and Tyrell Ford. I think not just on a football sense, but also from a marketing standpoint, I think that's very intelligent. So I'm bullish on what the Elks have done here. And I do like, and I think Justin's point about the receivers is well taken. Trey Odoms Dukes, not a proven guy. Arkell Smith, not a proven guy. Those are two guys I've got in the starting lineup right now. But if you look at Shamar Bridges, you look at Mekhi Polk, you look at Ontario Wilson, this is a league where American receivers should be able to pop off, right, as rookies. Dylan Mitchell did it with the Elks just a few years ago. And if the Elks are able to find somebody like that, then I think they're in really, really good shape.
What I like about this strategy from a Canadian perspective, and you touched on this a little bit, Dunk, but Ed Hervey is essentially paying to make up for the mistakes of his predecessors. Every time around draft year, or every year around draft time, I should say, we got onto a discussion about Chris Jones and his preferences towards, let's say, unique prospects. Sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. And there was occasional overreaches. He put investment into areas where maybe they didn't need to invest, let better talent on the table on occasion when he was looking at young Canadians. I think Ed Hervey inherited a team that was lacking quality impact Canadian starters. And he said, well, that's not going to work for me. This is not going to be a multi-year rebuild where I'm going to build it slowly. I'm sure he's going to put all his effort into the draft to make sure going forward they have that base built. But he said, I'm going to pay to have that right now. He went out and got those proven national starters. I think that is really smart. And I think that is perhaps the number one thing that a new GM taking over a struggling franchise should do in this league is target the key star Canadians on the market and bring them into your team. If you can do that, that gives you a huge leg up on the competition because American rookies coming in, they're a dime a dozen. Even if you don't find the guy on the first batch, you can find it on the second or the third batch. There isn't those same batches with Canadians. That top level of the market gets locked up really quickly. You've got to find those guys and bring them in.
JC, you reported the financials for every BC Lions free agent signing and provided a speculative depth chart for the team. After going through all the details, what are your impressions for the franchise in 2025?
Well, this is still a team that I believe has some holes on it that need to be addressed. They've got an unproven rookie lined up as their starting Sam linebacker right now. I don't love the receiving core overall, but we'll take a step back and look just at the free agent signings that they made. While none of these moves are going to necessarily revolutionize the roster, I thought they got really good value for the most part in adding some veterans and adding some pieces that are going to establish the culture that this team wants to have going forward. And I look at a guy like Jeremiah Mazzoli, who we've talked about. It's not going to be your starter. He's not going to challenge Nathan Rourke for reps, but he's going to be a really good voice of wisdom in that room, a guy who can step in if need, push Chase Bryce potentially to step into that number two role. And all in, even if he were, knock on wood, to play the entire season and put up crazy numbers, the most he can make next year is about $120,000. That is really, really good value for a player with Masoli's experience. I also look at a guy like David Foucault in a similar vein. 36-year-old, but still a really solid Canadian offensive lineman. I thought he was excellent for Edmonton last year. They're paying him $94,000 in hard money. That means they have the flexibility. If they need to start Foucault, they can. If George Unga comes out in training camp, their first round pick from last year, and seizes that right guard spot, well, they can easily start Unga and have Foucault as a backup because he's not going to break the bank. I think when you look at these moves as a whole, they are not overpaying for really any of them, and most of them are savvy depth additions that are coming in for relatively cheap. Guys like Braden Lenius, who has high upside for next to nothing. Micah Alwe isn't making a ton of money as a veteran that can institute the physicality that they thought they were missing on defense. The most expensive piece, probably Dwayne Hendricks at defensive tackle, but that was a spot where you had to get better. So I think the Lions did a reasonably good job overall in adding some supplementary pieces throughout this process.
You know, I'm most curious to see, with regard to the BC Lions, what happens with Alexander Hollins. JC, you could probably speak even better than this to me, but, you know, when the market settles out and kind of sets your price, as Ed Hervey wanted it to do with Eugene Lewis, but then didn't even talk to him, that's a whole other topic, then I wonder if the same thing could potentially happen here with Hollins. It's clear from Ryan Rigmaiden talking about him that he has an affinity for the player and that he needs to be more consistent catching the football and first and foremost needs to be healthy. But the market sort of settled it out with Keon Hatcher and they quickly got back together. I wonder if that could be a possibility with Hollins.
I think anything is possible. You note the Keon Hatcher situation. That happened very quickly. He got a chance to test that market and then was brought back on what I believe is a really good value deal. His new contract's only going to pay him $150,000 in hard money. I think that's great value for a receiver of his caliber if he can get back to where he was before the injury. Alexander Hollins, though, my concern with bringing him back is he doesn't strike me as a guy that easily lets bygones be bygones, right? He was known for sometimes having to be talked down by his teammates on the sideline, emotional reactions, sometimes letting his struggles get the best of him. When he dropped the pass, his body language changed. It snowballed from there. And that's something that Ryan Rigmaiden has talked about. I don't know if bringing a guy back who you have released and said, hey, you're not worth the money, is going to be conducive when that's not a guy who has shown in the past that he can move on from slights like that. Again, maybe Hollins has his, for lack of a better term, come to Jesus moment and realizes he doesn't have any other options, wants to go someplace where he's comfortable. I wouldn't rule it out, but I think it's more likely he's going to end up as a value add somewhere else in the league.
To me, the signing that did not make sense, especially looking at the numbers, was Micah Awe in the middle. Micah Awe, I thought, was not as good of a player last year as Ace Ealy, the team's nominee for most outstanding rookie, who they then cut. So they got more expensive and older at middle linebacker, especially because between Ben Haladic and Adam O'Clair, who I thought was a very nice add at around $130,000, you've got the talent to start a Canadian linebacker. Now, the Lions are obviously the envy of the league at the quarterback position because they're the only team that, well, Edmonton now, I suppose, too, but they're one of few teams that has a Canadian passport at quarterback. I thought it was interesting that they don't seem intent on starting a Canadian linebacker. To me, Josh Woods is obviously a starter, and either you go young with Ealy or you go Canadian with Haladic and O'Clair. That being said, I liked all of these other signings for BC. I agree David Foucault is great value. I agree that, you know, George Unna, if he's the starter there, it's nice to have a guy like Foucault with that experience. I thought this team was smart for not doubling down on the receiving court. James Butler, I think, is a very nice addition and value at that starting running back spot. He's a better receiver out of the backfield than William Standback, and it appears that that is something that the Lions do want to do. So I like most of what the Lions did. The linebacking situation does not make much sense to me, but I also trust that Ryan Rigmaiden knows more about football than I do. So I'm interested to see what this actually looks like on the field. Last thing I want to say on this is I want to commend JC on his amazing graphics abilities that this depth chart he put together, because it reminds me of when I was a kid and first using computers in the early 90s, and everything looked like this, because it's tacky and kind of ugly to look at.
At least I didn't stick my long snapper in the middle of my defense like you did.
My depth charts, I don't like having three separate graphics for depth charts. So I stick, using a different color scheme, the special teams players.
Just put them down
defense
at the bottom left.
It gives
everybody
me
else
a headache,
does,
man.
I just want to be different.
I could do that if it bothers people. But my depth chart looks pretty, like it was made post Y2K. So I'm still more satisfied with my depth chart than your depth chart.
Oh, boy.
Well, we'll agree to disagree. I'm not claiming to be a graphic designer, but I prefer it to having my kick returner beside my cornerback.
The comparison I'll make, fellas, is a nice, crisp picture of Bo Levi Mitchell. And then the one that somebody did up that was like a cartoon over top of it. You guys remember that? In free agency, like Hodges is the nice, crisp depth chart. JC's is like
MS
where you just take
edit
out your phone. Yeah, the MS Paint edit of the Bo Levi Mitchell picture.
We're using the
I
same software.
Came
I don't
around
know how
when he was with
be
the Ticats.
I don't know how it could be so different when we're using the same software.
It's called user error, my friend. User error. If the software is the same and the results are different, that is called user error.
I think you just don't like orange. I think you don't like the color scheme. That's what
it is not the color scheme. It's not the color
you
scheme.
You know what? I've never seen Hodge wear orange.
Maybe he doesn't
like the color.
He does. He does hate the Lions. That's everyone was correct.
I don't think I look good in orange, but I like orange just fine. I don't wear anything from like 2/3 of the color wheel. I wear white, gray, black, and blue, and that's it. I don't wear any other color.
You probably eat oranges, though. So you don't hate everything.
No, I like orange. I'm just saying my wardrobe is eccentric, and I acknowledge that.
What about your purple and yellow Lakers hat? That's a loud hat, bro.
That is a loud hat, and I do have a green toque that I wear as well. So I wear a little bit of green, I suppose, but I don't wear reds. I don't wear pinks. I don't wear orange. It doesn't look good with my skin. I have a very naturally like reddish pink skin tone. So if I wear any of those colors, it doesn't look good. I need to wear, like my wife would say, I'm a winter. I'm supposed to wear winter colors. They look good on me. The other colors don't.
I did not think we were going to get into winter skin tones today. Fashion
is
advice.
Is your green toque the Three Down Nation one, Hodge?
No, I gave that one away to a loyal listener. But I have a green toque that I wear. I do have a kind of like a dark, like a brownish orange toque. So I guess a little bit. But I don't own shirts. I don't own pants in those colors. I don't own ties. I don't wear them.
He's a man of the people, giving away toques.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, oh, oh. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Damn.
Dunk, you reported the free agent terms for Saskatchewan's additions. How do you feel about what the Riders paid to bring in their guys?
I think there's a lot of value here from Jeremy O'Day, his front office staff, and Corey Mace plays a big role. as a recruiter, you know, I'll run it down real quick because I think it helps give context. I like what Hodge did with Edmonton. You bring in short yardage quarterback monster Tommy Stevens on a deal that's $93,000 in hard money with playtime additional in there and some all-star and award incentives. And I think for the uninitiated out there, literally in every contract, there's going to be around $5,000 to $6,000 in all-star and award incentives. Like that's in, I would say, 99% of the player deals. So that's why we talk about the hard money. That's the real key in this, because only one player can win the Canadian Football League's Most Outstanding Player Award, and on down
I think,
list.
No disrespect to Tommy Stevens, we're on agreement that he will not be the most outstanding player in the CFL in 2025. Like, that's not...
What if he scores, like, 30 rushing touchdowns?
A short yardage quarterback is not going to be the MOP in the CFL. It's not going to happen.
Highly doubtful, I would agree.
I'm just saying. So, to a certain extent, these bonuses are negligible, because they're not reachable.
And that's why we use the term hard money. We don't say guaranteed, because it's not necessarily guaranteed, because you need to be there the whole season. So that's where hard money comes from. You look at center, what they get with Sean McEwen, a veteran, three-time All-CFL guy, $143,000 in hard money. Really like that deal. And then you have Philippe Gagnon, who's kind of that David Foucault for the Riders, as Foucault is with the BC Lions. $92,000 in hard money, can start, can be a swing guy, can be your sixth or seventh offensive lineman, depending how many of the Riders decide to dress. I really like that addition. He's tough, physical, and nasty. Canadian receiver Tommy Neal probably goes under the radar for a lot of people, but a big physical frame, has some upside. The Riders snapped him up right away after the Argos released him. He gets $91,700 in hard money with some playtime incentives additional possible for him. Intrigued to see what he can do there with the Riders in a receiving corps that plays and starts Canadians. Like, they don't care. If you're good enough, they'll play you. Then on the defensive side of the ball, three-time CFL All-Star defensive lineman Mike Rose gets a one-year contract worth $175,000 in hard money. To me, that's notable, fellas, because he was due to make around $200,000 with the Calgary Stampeders prior to Dave Dickinson and the franchise releasing him. So I think Jeremy O'Day gets a little bit of value there. And then Shane Ray comes back from the NFL, signs a one-year contract worth $125,000 in hard money. And then the big one that a lot of people in Ryderville are excited about, Canadian defensive back Tavon Campbell, signed a one-year contract worth $153,200 in hard money. He can earn an additional $5,400 in playtime incentives. I really like that deal, you know, especially, fellas, and I want to get your take on this. When you compare Tyrell Ford getting $230,000 in hard money, and yes, I know he played in the CFL much more recently than Campbell, but Campbell's the guy who had a pretty solid run in the NFL. Like, to me, that screams a lot of value when you compare just those two contracts.
I agree. The value is very good across the board here. I think Sean McEwen, right, we talked about David Beard getting $197,000 in hard money in Edmonton. Well, getting Sean McEwen, who's arguably just as good, for $143,000 feels like a bargain. Philippe Gagnon, that is what a lot of teams would call a sixth man deal, right? This is not a starting caliber contract. This is a contract for a sixth offensive lineman. For the record, I put together a Saskatchewan Rough Riders depth chart. It's up on my Twitter account. I only have six starters laid out for the Riders right now. Obviously, they'll need seven from the start. Pardon me.
It's not even compliant, bro. You couldn't even play with that roster.
Well, I didn't want to declare things on behalf of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I think it's safe to project that Campbell and Nelson Lacombo will start in the secondary. I think it's clear that they're going to start at least two Canadians along the offensive line and at least two Canadians in the receiving corps. I've got Sam Emelis and Kian Schaefer-Baker there. This team could absolutely start three receivers. And by the way, I am very high on Tommy Neal. He's a guy who can contribute on special teams in addition to doing some of that dirty work in the receiving corps. To me, he's your replacement for Ajoa Joe, who is now in the NFL. But you could start Mitch Pickton right out at wide. You'd have to sit probably Dont'a Myers to do that. But there's options there. You could also start Philippe Gagnon at guard. Right now I've got Jacob Brammer in at the right guard position. But the point is, this team has some ratio flexibility. I don't think it's as good as Edmonton, some of the other teams that we've looked at. But I think this team has high-level starters more or less across the board, and a lot of these financials are on point, right? Getting a guy like Mike Rose for $175,000 hard, that is not a lot more than what Dwayne Hendricks, for instance, got with the BC Lions. But I think Mike Rose is a better player, right, than Dwayne Hendricks. So I like these moves. The only thing I will say to Vaughn Campbell at $153,000, yes, it's a lot less than Tyrell Ford got, but we haven't seen Tavon Campbell in Canada in a long time. He is 31 years old. He hasn't played three down football in a long time. And as I raised when the signing was made official, we have seen players, guys like Vaughn Martin, or even to a lesser extent, Christian Covington, come to the CFL after long stints in the NFL, and they're simply not what they used to be. So we'll see what Tavon Campbell is. I think it's possible that he's an all CFL corner. I think it's also possible that he could be a bit of a liability. We don't know. Training camp has not gotten started yet, but that's the guy I'm most interested to see in all this, because his deal is the only one I look at, and I don't think it's a bargain. I'm not saying it's an overpay, but it doesn't scream like, wow, they got Tavon Campbell for 153. I think that there's a possibility that that signing doesn't work out, but we have to wait and see.
There's a wide array of outcomes with Campbell, and it could very easily, when we're sitting here a year from now, we could look at that deal and say, wow, they overpaid a ton, or we could look at that deal and say, wow, they got a real steal because he ended up being an elite cornerback, one of the best in the league. I think both possibilities are out there. When it comes to the ratio flexibility and how they're going to deploy that, I think it's important to remind fans that you can do that bait and switch, right? And you, with the veteran American players, and start a Canadian and then take a guy who's been around for five seasons in the league or three seasons with your team and swap him in after the first snap for up to 59 or up to 49% of snaps, but really the whole game, because you swap him with whatever young American doesn't qualify and they're really the one rotating in. Very complicated, convoluted thing that the CFL has put in recent years. So theoretically, for me, I see them starting a third Canadian receiver, possibly Tommy Neild or Mitch Picton or Dell Duncan Busby alongside Schaefer Baker and Sam Emilis, and then have Sean Bain Jr., who would be the veteran American in that receiving core, listed as a backup initially, but on the first snap or after the first snap, you take whoever that Canadian might be off the field, put Bain back on alongside a guy like Dante Myers, and then essentially Dante Myers and that third Canadian starter will rotate back and forth throughout the game, so they are splitting the reps and they can get more Americans onto the field. That is completely legal under the current CFL rules. I think you'll see a similar thing in BC with Ben Hladek and Micah Alway doing the switch off in the linebacking core. So when you evaluate these moves and where the Canadians are going to start, you have to take into consideration who are the veteran Americans and how can they use that to their advantage.
There's a lot of ratio flexibility on the roster. JC laid out the receivers well. You look at the offensive line. Logan Ferland mostly played right guard last year, though at the end of the season, spent a little bit of time at tackle and center. He's very versatile. They could easily start four Canadians on the offensive line if they needed to. Definitely three with some depth. And we can't forget Zach Fry started games last year for the Riders. And then you look at the defensive side of the ball, and I think it goes under the radar sometimes, guys, but the Riders selected Lecourte Moore high in the draft, and by all accounts are still high on his possibilities. Like, he could be a guy that could definitely get you through a game. And I think they view him as a potential starter down the road. And I think he could probably start if he needed to, as he continues to develop potentially into an every game, every down starter. Then you look at the linebacking core. It looks like they're going to go All-American, but if they needed to for a ratio spot, AJ Allen could slot in there. They have the Herdman Reed twins who can help get you through a game if you had an issue there. And then it's kind of well documented. We've talked about it in the secondary, but there's some capable guys there, like Akosi Onyeka, for example, that if there was an injury, let's say to Tavon Campbell, they could put Akosi Onyeka, I think, if the Riders wanted to, in at that field corner spot and put Sales over to the boundary corner. And I think, Fells, you correct me if you think I'm wrong, and this is speculation, that when you look at Tavon Campbell's contract, his length and his speed, that it would make the most sense that he gets the first shot at boundary corner. That said, Marcus Sales has much more experience in the Canadian Football League, but he's due to make about in and around $20,000 less. He's in the $133,000 hard money range. So if you look at the contracts, you know, that would usually tell you that probably Campbell's going to be on the boundary side, but part of why Campbell's getting that extra money is because he's Canadian too.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Hodge.
I was just going to say, I think the Riders are in trouble if they try to start four Canadian offensive linemen, but I don't think they'll need to. Right? I think that would really push their depth. I'm not as high on Zach Frye. But again, I don't think it'll come to that. Yes, Logan Ferland started one game of tackle last year. I don't think you want Logan Ferland to tackle full-time. They don't have any other Canadians who can play tackle. Daniel Johnson did it at Purdue a little bit, but he has also been plagued, right? This is why he fell in last year's draft so much. He's been tremendously plagued by knee injuries. So I don't think they could start four Canadians on the offensive line. Maybe they could for like a week, but I don't think they'll have to. They've got other Canadians elsewhere. I do want to add quickly, I did a Toronto Argonauts version of this article. We're not going to do a big, long segment on the Argonauts just because relative to some other teams, they had very few free agent signings. But I do want to run them down quickly. Defensive lion Brian Cox Jr., who, like his father, flipped off fans at an opposing game, doing so for Sasada Stadium after the West Final, got $20,000 as a signing bonus to join the Argonauts. He'll make $120,000. This year, he had six sacks with the Riders in 2024. Anthony Lanier also comes over from Saskatchewan. He was once the highest paid defensive player in the CFL. He's only going to make $110,000 in hard money with the Argos. I really like that as a bargain signing. He's a guy who I think is still looking to get back to that top level. And if he does so, the Argonauts will have gotten him at a tremendously team-friendly rate. Darius Bratton is coming over from Edmonton as a defensive halfback. He's getting 105 in hard money. And Celestin Haba, as a rotational edge rusher with the Argonauts, formerly the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, is getting exactly $100,000 in hard money. And then they were able, I think, to make some nice depth additions as well. Hergie Mayala, DeMarcus Christmas, Siante Evans, Will Sunderland, guys who are proven CFL starters, all coming in at under $90,000 in hard money. And looking at this depth chart for Toronto, it's looking very much like they're going to start four Canadians on the offensive line, two, even three Canadians in the receiving core, and then, of course, Cam Judge at will linebacker. There's some good ratio flexibility here. They may also start Tyshawn Blackburn, formerly of the University of Alberta, at safety. That would give them even more depth in terms of their Canadian starters. This roster has holes. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. There's no way that this depth chart, anybody could argue, is better than the one Toronto fielded in 2024. But looking at this roster right now, I do think that some of the pronouncements of Toronto's demise have been a little bit overstated. I think the secondary is good. I think this linebacking core is great. The defensive line, while certainly not as good as a year ago, I think still could be competitive. And then offensively, this team is basically the same as it was a year ago. Yeah, Mekhi Polk is out, but every other starter is back, plus Darius Sirocco, who missed all of last year due to an injury and has been an all-star center before. So offensively, I really like where the Argos are at. I think they're going to score a lot more points in 2025 than they did in 2024. And while that defensive front is not going to be as good, I don't think they're going to have to be as good as they were last year to continue winning games.
Yeah, I think the problem with Toronto when we're doing these assessments is there's a wider swing of possible outcomes with the guys that they have as projected starters right now. You don't know exactly what you're going to get from Anthony Lanier. We know what the top level has been for him, but we also know that he struggled to get on the field last year. Which of those two versions of the player are you going to get? Because that is going to massively affect how effective your team can be. You've got guys like Jordan Williams and Derek Parrish going into year two. Are they what they were as rookies, or do they take a massive step forward? Both are possible, and then you need to fill that role left by Mekhi Polk. I think that's one of the most underrated or least talked about gaps among all CFL rosters is Polk. When he emerged last season, changed that offense dramatically. And I don't think that is as easy to replace as we may be thinking it is. I think they're going to have a huge drop-off unless they can find the next guy who can take the top off like Polk did.
Just one note on Anthony Lanier, fellas. In 2023, he was the highest-paid defensive player in the league, Hodge, as you alluded to, $250,000. So that's how fast professional football can come at you. You go from $250,000, highest-paid defensive player in the league, down to $110,000. If this isn't sort of a come-to-Jesus moment, to steal a line from JC, for Lanier, then his career is trending towards being over, because by the end of last season, he was a healthy scratch with the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and a guy in Corey Mace, who is known, you know, for being a defensive lineman in this league, but also for getting the most out of his guys. There's no more resting on your laurels if you're Anthony Lanier, who, I should balance it out by saying that if he plays to the level that he's capable of, can be an elite defensive lineman in this league that can play inside and out and can be a consistent disruptor.
University of Regina Rams defensive lineman Tariq Polias and defensive back Michael Jordan have been charged with a combined 9 criminal offenses, including possessing and distributing fentanyl. The charges were laid following a 4-month investigation by Regina police, which saw 8 warrants executed. The police seized 5 kilograms of fentanyl, 476 grams of cocaine, 22 grams of methamphetamine, $151,425 in cash, a prohibited .22 caliber handgun and ammunition, a restricted 9mm handgun and ammunition, and 3 vehicles. The Rams suspended both players from the team, but declined to comment on the arrest or the charges. None of the allegations against the 2 players or the 3 other men facing related charges have been proven in court. Dunk. What does this mean for Polias, Jordan, and the Rams?
For all intents and purposes, Polias and Jordan, it's Michael Jordan, like the basketball player, their football careers are going to be done unless all of these charges are just thrown out. So I don't want to assume anything that way, but that's how a lot of football people will view this. And I think, fellas, we should really center our focus on this around football, because the University of Regina is in a year where they're hosting the Vanier Cup, coming off a wild run in the playoffs, and to get in was just an unbelievable scenario at 3-5. But full credit to them, they took advantage, win the Hardy Cup, and we're very close to knocking off the Laval Rouge Or, who eventually won the Vanier Cup at home at Mosaic Stadium. That these guys were difference makers, and specifically Polias. He was an absolute monster. I had Canadian Football League scouts saying to me that, like, if this guy continues on this trend, he could be an NFL guy. So that's what's at stake here for these two football players in terms of their lives being changed with what has occurred here, the arrests and the charges. And 3-Down Nation will continue to follow this story as it plays out.
Yeah, Polias, 6'7", 310 pounds, and athletic at that size. He was somebody who I think potentially was going to have an 8 to 10 year CFL career, if not NFL. So I agree with what you said in your assessment, Justin. As of now, if these hold, one would think that football is over for these two individuals. The other thing I'll say, and this doesn't have it, I'm not assuming innocence, I'm not assuming guilt, anything. Just as an aside, one of the things I hate about stories like this is that U Sports gets little to no mainstream news coverage in this country. And the only time a member of the public without a vested interest in U Sports athletics sees, reads, watches anything about U Sports is when somebody involved in U Sports is accused of doing something terrible, right? Charges have been laid or a serious allegation of impropriety has been made. And I wish it was not like that. right? I wish it was not like that. I wish that these athletes got the attention that they deserved on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis, especially during the season. Just recently, I attended with a friend of mine at the University of Manitoba a basketball game between the Bisons and Winnipeg Westmen. The ladies played at 6, the men played at 8. The first game probably had 1,500 people in attendance. The second game was basically sold out, 3,000 people. It was frigid outside. Terrible Winnipeg, Manitoba winter winds. But inside, it was warm. It was hopping. It was incredible. And I don't think there was any true media coverage of that game. Like, this is an event with 3,000 people cheering for one of the other teams. And obviously, I appreciate this is not a typical university athletics event. This is two universities from the same city facing off, and they had a doubleheader the second day these same teams met at the University of Winnipeg in downtown Winnipeg. But it sucks, right, that these athletes work so hard. By the way, both were sensational games. Manitoba narrowly won the ladies' game. The men's game narrowly won by the Westmen. But, you know, I just wish that people, again, who don't necessarily go out of their way to learn about U Sports, who maybe just casually read the news, watch the news, whatever, got the opportunity to understand and appreciate what these athletes do, what their games are like, and didn't just, you know, every few months see a nasty headline like this, because I don't think that gives a true reflection of what U Sports or university athletics in this country are about. But we also can't control what the media as a whole does. We understand that across the board, media is in a troubling time. And at 3Down, we do our best to showcase these athletes in a positive way. But unfortunately, sometimes it's just stories like this that break through to the mainstream.
Yeah, it's truly tragic that that is people's exposure to this great game. And let's not forget, of course, there's a human cost to society at large in these types of situations if these drugs hit the streets. But from the football perspective, as you've noted, hopefully people can take this as a lesson, regardless of what comes of these charges. You know, watch who you're associating with. Watch what you're doing off the field, because Tariq Polias, as you noted, Dunk, had about as bright of a future football-wise as you can have as a U Sports prospect. I think he would have been a lock as a CFL first-round pick if he didn't go to the NFL. A guy who I think very realistically, if he had the ability or had the opportunity to, could have played in the NCAA with his skill set. Even if he's found not guilty or this is simply an association thing, we don't know what's going to happen with these charges. But he's now been touched by this. And in a way, he's going to be toxic. And that's going to affect him for the rest of his life, no matter what. So hopefully people can look at that as a lesson, because there is nobody who wins in these sorts of scenarios.
JC, you have made your watch list for the CFL Invitational Combine, which goes Friday in Waterloo. Which prospects are you most excited about?
Well, I think this is a great group at the Invitational Combine, and there's a number of names that I'll highlight in my article, which will be published later today. For those of you who are listening, we're recording this on Wednesday. It should be out later that same day. The guy I'll highlight to start is receiver Tristan Michaud out of the University of South Dakota. This is a guy who does not have a bunch of college production, played very little for the Yotes at the FCS level, didn't play very much previously when he was at Iowa State. But you look at his frame, he is a 6'6" receiver. And we have seen time and time again, going through the draft, 6'6" guys, particularly with NCAA pedigree, even if their production falls off at a certain stage, are going to be very intriguing to CFL teams. I think if he tests well through this process and is able to show that his lack of playing time was more situational than anything else, and he still has untapped potential, then he's somebody who can rise through this draft process just based on his frame.
The one that jumps out to me for the CFL Invitational Combine, which the name doesn't actually reflect the event properly, but that's a conversation for another day, just like all CFL West Division, East Division, Like, can we just get some of this stuff right? At least the Canadian Football League got the numbers right, but I digress. I'm going to talk about a Canadian quarterback. Surprise, surprise. Yes, some people might go, oh, well, Dunk's talking about a Canadian quarterback. But fellas, you know, it's rare in the draft. It's become a little bit more consistent that we get to talk about these guys. But Jackson Tuchinski is definitely a name to pay attention to. I've had people through the years compare him to Chris Streveler, not only for his athletic ability, but for what he could potentially do and bring to a team, the Canadian Football League. And Hodge, you've watched him up close more than the three of us combined. I've seen a handful of his games covering the Canada West and doing the broadcasts out there, but you're obviously based there in Winnipeg, go to all the home games, know the coaching staff really well. So I want you to speak to him too. But Jackson Tuchinski, you know, has the makeup, has the physicality, has the right focus, I think, to be a legitimate quarterback prospect in the Canadian Football League. He definitely needs to get better as a passer. He's still developing there. But if he's given the same chance as all of these Americans that are going to be signed and brought to training camp as quarterbacks throughout the Canadian Football League, I think he can be a guy that has some intriguing upside.
I think a year ago, I saw Jackson Tuchinski as a legit CFL quarterback prospect. He was coming off a 10-touchdown, 1-interception season. This past year, only 8 touchdowns, 7 picks, which wasn't the step I was looking for him to take. That being said, he is an extremely exciting player to watch, the way he was able to improvise by time. This is a guy who ran for 146 yards in a game against Alberta last year and had almost 700 yards rushing on the season with 7 rushing touchdowns. So Jackson Tuchinski, I think, is a legit CFL prospect, even if he's not a quarterback prospect, because I could see a possibility of him being a Brad Sinopoli type player who at 6'4" and well over 200 pounds, who can make plays in the open field, also tough as nails. Like one of these guys who, like Chris Streveler, seeks out contact. Not only is he fine with contact, he seems to enjoy it, which I don't even know how that's a thing, but good for him. I could be. It has to run well, right? He can't run a 4.9 and try to be a receiver in the CFL. But if he runs, let's say 4.7 or below, I think that he could be a legit candidate to move. My player I'm going to highlight is Jake Nitichorek, 6'4", 210-pound defensive back at the University of Manitoba. Not a ton of production defensively, and not a guy who I saw a lot in coverage because he played field side corner. That spot, especially at U Sports, doesn't get a lot of attention. But the reason I'm highlighting him is because, generally speaking, with few exceptions, in the CFL draft, you're not drafting DBs based on their coverage ability. You're drafting them based off of size and special teams value. And Jake Nitichorek is one of the most physical defensive backs I've ever watched at the university level. The stereotype for university defensive backs is they're all 5'9", and coverage guys, there's not a lot of value for CFL teams in that. Jake Nitichorek is the complete opposite. He is somebody who you wouldn't want to start at boundary corner in the CFL, but could absolutely help fill out your roster as a big-bodied guy who I think should have his skill set translate very well to special teams. And of course, we'll see who the top performers for this event are, because they are going to get invited to the CFL Combine in Regina in March, because of course, the CFL Combine is an invitational event, whereas the CFL Invitational Combine is not an invitational event. Figure that one out.
The last name I'll highlight before we move on is a guy that I'll have a profile up likely Thursday on, Brandon Davies Lions, defensive lineman, big nose tackle from York University. If you're looking for somebody to root for as an underdog player who you know is going to do right by you in terms of his character, this is the guy to focus on for fans, because he has an incredible story based on where he came from. He does a tremendous amount of work in the community with his nonprofit Indian Athletes in Action, highlighting Indigenous athlete stories on social media, but also doing food drives and mentorship for local youth. But as a player, he's a fascinating prospect, because last year, as the nose tackle for York, they had injuries along the offensive line, and he was asked
to flip over and play guard. He did so, started the last five games of the season wearing number 94 at guard, which I know Dunk would have hated. And they were able to win the first two games of his collegiate career ever, because the York Lions have been the doormat of the OUA throughout most of his time there. I think he's somebody who's battled through a lot of adversity in his life. I got to see him at the College Gridiron Showcase last month in Texas. He performed really well down there. I'm excited to see what he can do at the Invitational Combine, where I'm told he might just do every single rep, both sides of the offensive and defensive line, one-on-ones, flipping back and forth to show to teams that he's able to play them both.
For a second when you were saying that, I thought you meant on the same play. And I'm like, is he going to block him himself?
Hey,
I get what you're saying.
He's got the effort level to maybe do it. That guy hustles with a big smile on his face every single play.
I have sometimes joked with people, even some in the league, about becoming the first, like we've seen player coaches. Could I be a player reporter? Like, I want to go and ask myself hard questions in the locker room after the game and then viciously lash out at myself because it's like, well, yeah, I allowed five sacks today, but how dare you ask me about that?
Create a video for social media doing that. You could have Brandon Davies Lyons rushing as a D lineman.
Yes.
And then do his offensive lineman stance, right? And then put it together. Hodge, you could do the same thing.
You just need a body
question. Flip on the other side and answer it. Like, what jersey would you wear? And more importantly, what number?
What number? What jersey would I wear? Well, I guess that I would wear the jersey of the team I was on, depending. I mean, we'll see. But number, I don't know. I never had a number growing up that I would just wear. Like, I would just get assigned something and I'd take it. But I'm not a diva quarterback like you, Justin. So I don't know. I would just take what I was given. That's what you do when you play O-line.
You want number 009? How does that sound?
009. Was there a significance to 009?
No, it just looks disgusting.
Oh, yeah, right. I see what you're saying with the combines. Yeah, sometimes the three-digit numbers just look wrong. But anyway, it's time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2020, the Montreal Alouettes signed receiver Naaman Roosevelt. The 6'1", 195-pound target spent the previous five seasons with the Saskatchewan Roughriders, catching 301 passes for 4,134 yards and 20 touchdowns, earning one West Division All-Star selection. The native of Buffalo, New York, never suited up for the team, however, due to the cancellation of the CFL season, and eventually joined the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in 2021, though he again never saw any regular season action. Roosevelt has since entered the CFL's coaching ranks, serving as an assistant with the Riders in 2023 before becoming Hamilton's receivers coach in 2024. I think it's wild in hindsight that the last game of Naaman Roosevelt's career was in 2019 with Saskatchewan. I think had anybody known, that would have been a mind-blowing thing because he was so good with the Riders. I know he was a little bit of on a downtrend in 2019, but he was so good over five seasons with the Riders. To me, it's wild that he never got the chance to play again after that season.
My favorite fact about Naaman Roosevelt is his nickname. People will call him the president if you know your American history. Don't understand why. JC, no comment? You're good?
I got nothing on Naaman Roosevelt. I thought he was a great player. It's unfortunate that a lot of guys were in that situation with the pandemic where they lost a valuable season because of the cancellation.
Let's go to the three-minute drill. The Hamilton Tiger Cats have brought back defensive end Julian Hauser. Can he actually boost the Tiger Cats' pass rush at this point in his career?
I mean, I don't think Julian Hauser is a world beater, but I do think that he is a high motor guy who can grab some sacks for you. And I was a position looking at Hamilton's depth chart, which isn't public yet, but we have made behind the scenes, that the Ticats really needed somebody with CFL experience. So I do actually like the addition for the Tiger Cats. IFAF has tapped former Football Canada president Jim Mullen to lead its new Global Tackle Football Task Force. Is that a wise decision?
I think it is. I think Jim did really tremendous work with Football Canada, and he knows the international game extremely intimately. I can think of few people who would be more qualified for this task. Dunk, longtime Wilfrid Laurier head coach Michael Falds told you there's a lack of new blood in the CFL. What did he mean by that comment?
He meant that, like, when he's coaching at Wilfrid Laurier, you know, every year the same people come by, let's say, to scout his team, but they're wearing different caps. So he didn't feel like there was new blood there. And then, you know, potentially even in the coaching ranks, that said, I think there has been some new blood, but the football operations cap is something that is really holding that back. And I got some messages after this article was published on freedownation.com from people around the league, essentially saying exactly that, and also adding that the job security in youth sports is better, way better, and the pay is even better than it is potentially jumping to the Canadian Football League. If you're Michael Falds, for example, last point, because I know it's supposed to be quick, you know that you can coach at Wilfrid Laurier probably for as long as you want because of the reputation that he has and the credibility that he's built up. Whereas if you go to the CFL, you could be out after one season, but it's not even worth it from a financial standpoint to potentially even consider making that move. Canadian defensive back Javon Holland was ranked as the number three pending NFL free agent by Pro Football Focus. How much money could he make if he hits the open market?
Well, the projection from SpotRack is that he will make in and around $15.1 million on his next deal. It does not look like he'll be back with the Miami Dolphins. It looks like he will hit the open market. Being able to negotiate with other NFL teams come March 10th, he, I think, will be one of the highest paid safeties in the NFL in 2025. I have actually no idea because it's not even a real word. So I'll say it however. The BC Lions cut most outstanding rookie nominee Ace Ealy, and he immediately signed with the Red Blacks. Is that a big addition?
I think it'll be a nice depth piece for the Ottawa Red Blacks. As for the Lions, I know a lot of people were shocked by this release. I don't think they were nearly as high on Ealy as some of the public was while he was starting last year, and they felt with their additions in free agency, he was expendable, wasn't realistically going to get a chance to start for the team, and they decided to let him go free. They're also very high on a rookie named Mike Smith Jr., who they believe will be in the mix pushing Micah Awe. So Ealy was let walk so he could have a better opportunity elsewhere. Charleston Hughes told 620 CKRM the worst mistake of his career was leaving Saskatchewan for Toronto. Do you believe him?
I do believe him. Just look at what happened. It's easy. The proof is in the pudding. And he gave that advice to Micah Johnson when the two were discussing Johnson potentially re-signing with the Saskatchewan Roughriders, which then ended up happening, or Johnson going elsewhere later in his career. Hamilton has signed Canadian running back Johnny Augustine, shout out, University of Guelph, bringing the team's total to 8 former Blue Bombers on the Tabbies roster, with Ted Gavaya as the new general manager there. Is adding Augustine a smart addition?
I think it is. I think Ante Litre is maybe the better running back at this point of his career, but Augustine is a good locker room guy. He's a smart player, and he does, despite being only 5'8", play well on specials. BC Lions general manager Ryan Rigmaiden praised Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke for his willingness to shovel snow off the team's practice field. JC, what's the most amount of snow you've ever shoveled?
Not very much. When I was a teenager, I got it in my head that I was going to go help out shovel the driveway one time when we had a rare snowfall out here in Vancouver. And I thought I was doing such a great job. And my mom came out of the house screaming. She's like, no, no, it's a gravel driveway. I dumped a whole bunch of gravel all over her entire flower bed and killed it all.
Sheesh.
So I was not allowed to shovel after that. In a story you broke, Dunk, University of Wyoming linebacker Connor Shea has been added to the 2025 CFL draft class. Could he be a first-round pick?
Yes, there's a chance. I think this guy could test really well at the Wyoming Pro Day and be a prospect that potentially rockets up the CFL draft board. Longtime CFL player and assistant coach Juwan Simpson has been hired at East Mississippi Community College. Is that an ideal fit?
I think it's a good fit, and I think Simpson is a good coach, even though things didn't necessarily work out with the Stampeders. Here's the interesting thing, though. East Mississippi Community College is in what is in Mississippi?
Last chance you. It's Scuba.
Yeah.
It's in Scuba, but is it actually in Mississippi, or is it in Alabama?
It's in Scuba, Mississippi.
It's in Scuba, Mississippi. Who names these places? Scuba? Anyway.
Man, this is a powerhouse at the JUCO level, Hodge.
There you go. I've seen an article.
What East Mississippi.
I do know that, yes.
Hodge, maybe you need to take a trip there to understand which state it's in.
Well, I'd seen something about East Mississippi Community College being in, like, physically located in Alabama. The implication being that it's east of the Mississippi River. But apparently that's not true, and it is in Mississippi. But I digress. We'll end the geography lesson. Canadian receiver Damian Alford has been re-added to the 2025 CFL draft class. Could he go as high as number one overall?
It's possible, but I don't think he'll go that high. I'm a little bit more lukewarm on Alford than some other people might be. I think he was the best of a bad batch of receivers at Syracuse, and then when he went elsewhere, struggled to see the field at Utah. He's got some things he has to prove as we go through this draft process to show that he can do more than just run deep balls for a bad team.
We thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. For the record, East Mississippi Community College is 5 minutes from the Alabama border. So it's not in Alabama. It is in East Mississippi, the far, 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 far east of Mississippi. And for Justin Duncan, J.C. Abbott, I'm John Hodge. We'll see you next week for the next episode of our Three Down Nation podcast.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free? TurboTax Free Edition. Roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.